It should be unmuted at the moment. So now we want to log in to the Zoom.
So it says enter Zoom.
That's great.
So I have it written down, so there's a couple ways you can find it. I'm going to exit full screen. It's here, or
I did
on this. It's all smushed in there, but.
It's great. I love the ice and candy. Yeah. It's fabulous.
Thank you.
You are going to be in Zoom meeting now.
Sorry. How do you stop this? Mute.
these things and then ask for feedback again. So I hope that we get to come back and talk about this some more. And then we'll talk about finalizing the final recommendations and how we go about that. Again, we know that, Reece mentioned this before, the system for the most part works for most people, right? And so we're going to try to implement changes so that we don't disrupt their lives. If, you know, they're okay. A good portion of the people have a short distance between parking and destination, less than 5 minutes. Well, they're probably pretty happy with that. So we need to make sure that whatever changes we make don't disrupt them. Talking about disruption quite a bit and trying to not disrupt, make it better. We need to, in the environment, the changing environment, campus environment, we need to be able to manage it better because we are losing parking.
So before we go to questions, first of all, thank you very much, Bridget and Reed. I'd like to talk very briefly about some of the contextual issues that we need to be communicating to constituents across campus. In support of the work that Bridget's office and our transportation committee is doing, I think the communication is going to be the key element where the EA can be a real factor in helping this information go out. First of all, the understanding and recognition that it's not just I can't find a space right now, but this is a complex issue with a massive number of stakeholders involved, with a huge geographic footprint, and the fact that, you know, these decisions and discussions take time. So as we communicate with our stakeholders, I think those are really the key elements that as an EA, we should be transmitting in support of the work that's being done. And lastly, I'd like to say, if we can keep it to 3 questions, and then beyond that, if there are further questions, I'd ask you to direct them to Christine and the Transportation Committee to be transmitted over to Bridget and Reed. So Laura first, Anne, and we'll see if there's a third one. So, Laura?
I had 3 questions myself, but I'll try to narrow it down to the one I think is probably most important for our constituents on the EA is, what is the occupancy percentage for the free lots? And has that been, did you do a spot check to account for bad weather? Because if you only studied in the spring and in the fall, right now with snow on the ground, a lot of people otherwise would bike, walk, come to campus some other way, are perhaps driving because of the weather's too lousy to bicycle in 25 miles from, you know, wherever.
We do spot checks right now.
Yeah.
Right now we're doing utilization checks on areas that we need to address in the immediacy. The North Campus, looking at the garages, etc. But understanding that parking is not as available in the winter because we have to put the snow somewhere.
Right.
And so it is difficult to do utilization counts during that time because it does not represent the real true story. But it's a good point that people make different decisions in the winter, so we'll have to take that into consideration.
Absolutely. We were talking about that today, actually, about the need to get out there and do some of these checks and see, kind of validate the data that we have and see if it's, if it translates throughout the year.
And the thing is, it may not matter if it translates throughout the year because there are, you know, when students are on campus, mm-hmm. you know, we've got several months when it's snowing and, you know, they're not mostly here in July and August. But what about the occupancy percent for the free lots? Because you're acknowledging that free parking is really important. That's what we hear a lot, and I know, you know, people have been involved with the traffic task force. You know, that was one of the many comments. But there is no parking in any lot. Yes, there's parking in the Hoy Road garage, but it's not free. It's actually, yeah. There's quite a difference.
I don't recall the actual number for a lot, but they're
70-80%.
Yeah, so there is a, you know, 20% of it available at most times. Certainly that perception, because it's such a large lot, the availability may be in that northwest corner. And so it might feel frustrating. So that to the point of if we have better data or better ways to communicate that, to say there are 17 spaces here or there are 45 spaces here, then people don't get frustrated. They know they're going to find something. But yes, we have looked at those. B-lot's another one that's not free, but it's probably our lowest cost option. And that also has quite a bit of availability as well.
And this was a snapshot in the beginning of fall. And we do recognize that things changed over fall semester. But there were a few shifts in parking patterns that, because we were ready, we didn't recognize. So we're going back out there to look again. This is going to be a living crisis.
Thank you.
Anne?
So, and one of the concerns that were voiced, I guess, in your initial survey was the cost of parking. And then, Reed, you mentioned that, relative to peer institutions, we're a little on the high end, but I didn't see a cost reduction recommendation in any of your, goals. So I'm just wondering, it's expensive to park on campus. A lot of people just can't afford those central parking permits. And so I'm just wondering if that's something you've considered, is just a reduction in the cost.
Yeah, so certainly, at least on the perimeter lots, we have a lot more availability, maybe making either there's less expensive or free, making that's what we're talking about, redistributing some of that free parking or low cost parking, creating more of it around the campus, I should say, not instead of redistributing, creating more of those options around campus. So people who have the choice. Regarding the central campus cost, that'll kind of, once we figure out all this other stuff, we'll look at that. And so again, if we create more opportunities for people to park at a lower cost or for free on different areas, does that help reduce some of the demand on central campus? Does that kind of get us to where we want to be from an occupancy standpoint?
So the cost modeling, right now we have an idea, but truthfully, just a blanket overall reduction in price needs more consideration, because that could be as disruptive. The demand right now in central campus, we have wait lists and people circulating. And so that, if you look at just a demand-based model, price model, it's not priced high enough. Now, that is not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that we're going to do that, but I think that requires far more investigation, and we need to simplify the permit system before we even start talking about cost.
Well, just as a follow-up, that that demand based pricing, you're the people who can afford, who you're going to be sort of like leaving out or excluding the people who work on campus who are unable to afford those inner, campus lots simply just because they can't afford it. So, I mean, by keeping the price high, you're essentially saying these are the people who we're going to give, the central permits to, is the people who can afford it, which means that a lot of the staff members are going to be sort of like excluded from those options. And it's just something to keep in mind.
Sure.
And maybe there's a system of a lottery, where there's not, it's not based on price so much as, another way to actually allow the general staff population to access these premium spots.
And our last question, Pilar.
You guys just mentioned now, obviously, we have certain low levels of occupancy or some spots are not being utilized. But then you just also mentioned that there are wait lists for some of these parking passes. So isn't that just a little bit, there's a discrepancy? If there's a wait list for specific parking passes, then where are those people parking?
Right. So that's a good point. So there are wait lists for, say, areas behind Myron Taylor, that kind of around Cornell Health. There's a lot of demand in that area. We just don't have the availability there. And so if you look at those parking lots, they're essentially always full. Whereas they might have the option to park in Hoy Garage, but it's not exactly where they want it to be. So we have, in that region, we have enough spaces that regional occupancy is in an okay zone, but specific areas, we have that wait list and we don't have the capacity.
So one of the things that Bridget pointed out was that the feedback is really important, especially going into next week. So I would encourage you, if you have further questions or comments that you'd like to share, please direct those to Christine so that they can be communicated to Bridget's team. Thank you very much. Really appreciate you all being here. You have a tough job.
It's a fun job.
We get to
and
be creative.
That's right. Our next guest is Marin. Yes, please.
It's Marin.
I apologize.
No problem.
Marin is joining us to talk about the Mid-States accreditation that's going to be taking place across
is
campus.
And
one of the elements of the Mid-State accreditation is about governance at the university, and this the role that we play, and our representative from the assembly is Hey Tui. So
I don't have a long thing to say. I'll just give a brief introduction. There are some slides that I think are coming up, but let me just start by giving an introduction about accreditation. So the university is accredited, and it's accredited by something called Middle States Commission on Higher Education. There are many things at Cornell that are accredited. Academically, there are academic programs like architecture. I think there are probably 20 different academic programs on campus that are accredited. That's a professional accreditation, which is different than university accreditation. So we're talking about university accreditation. University accreditation covers the whole university, and that includes all the parts that we often forget about, like WILE. It includes Cornell Tech, certainly, and so forth, all of our offerings. let me see. Why do we do it? Let me go back here and say this is a website that is now up, accreditation.cornell.edu. And information about accreditation in a sort of global sense is available to everyone there. This is from a Cornell Chronicle article, and I just want to highlight it, but feel free to visit the Chronicle article. So why do we do accreditation? We do it because accreditation, which is a private sort of voluntary operation, it happens in this way with these regional accreditors across the country. It's non-governmental. But we do it because sort of the mediation that has been worked out between us and the Department of Education of the United States government is that we will do this voluntary thing. They will recognize these middle state, these regional accreditors, and this will be our gateway to say that we're a good enough institution to receive federal financial aid for our students, for example. So that's a big one, federal funds for financial aid. But there's a whole additional pot of money that's available. Even if you have a private scholarship as an undergraduate, for example, or as a graduate student, it's to attend an accredited university. So accreditation is very important to us for those reasons. The accreditation process has been revamped since we went through it 10 years ago, and I was pretty involved in it 10 years ago and continue to be involved in it. And I didn't even introduce myself at the beginning very much, but my name is Marin Clark-Reed, that part is clear, and I work in institutional research and planning in Dade Hall. And I'm also serving as the accreditation liaison officer for Cornell University. So I'm the point person that goes between Cornell and Middle States in terms of, you know, communication and so forth. Last time we went through this 10 years ago, there were 14 standards for accreditation. There was a whole bunch of pushback at that time from other institutions like Princeton raised a big stink about how much time and money they spend on accreditation. They spent a lot of time and money arguing that. there's been some sort of, you know, sort of reconsideration, and I think the accreditation effort has been reduced slightly. So the standards have been rejiggered. The expectation for the sort of the number of pages in the self-study report has been scaled back a little bit. In any case, there are 7 standards for accreditation now. Each standard has a working group associated with it. And then in addition, there is a steering committee that is comprised of a small group of 5 of us and then the 7 working group chairs. So in total, there's 8 committees. The effort is very much intentionally faculty-led, so all the folks highlighted in yellow are faculty. Starting at the red line, the 7 faculty after this point are the chairs of the working groups. And then Mike Fontaine, who is from the Classics Department, and I are the co-chairs of the steering committee. And then we have Lisa Nishi, the Vice Provost of Undergraduate Education, Kathy Edmondson, who works in the vet school, but also does a role in relation to assessment of student learning for central administration, Alan Matthews, former Dean of Human Ecology, and then we have an undergraduate, and we're still in the market for a graduate student. So this is the Accreditation Steering Committee. Right now, we're in the process, early in the process, we are drafting our design. And generally, when I'm talking to faculty about this, I say this is like a dissertation proposal. This is where we say what we're going to do with our self-study. So we are in the process of writing the design now. That design will be sent to Middle States before March 7th. And then that March 7th design goes to them in part because we are having our Middle States liaison, the person that I communicate with most on the Middle State side, is coming to campus March 21st. Let me just say a few things about this visit. This is going to be, there's going to be an open forum as part of his visit, and all of you folks are invited, and anybody else that you think might want to come to this thing, to ask questions of our Middle States guy. He may have a package thing that he does, but I think he's going to be very much available to answer any questions about the process. So feel free to invite anyone you think might be interested in this. He'll be on campus meeting with folks between 7:30 a.m. till about 2 p.m. And an important part of this process is that sort of we're open and transparent, give people opportunities to provide their input. This is on here because Canvas is our new learning management system on campus. We used to have Blackboard, and now we're transitioning to Canvas, and all of our stuff for Middle States is we're setting up our working groups and sharing documents and so forth with Canvas. So that's been an interesting transition for us. So that's the end of my spiel, and happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Marin?
Hey, and Craig, you're both involved. Anybody else? There's about 75 people on committees at this point.
So as you may have questions in the future or things that come up that you'd like to find out more about, I'd ask you to please contact Hey so that we can get the answers for you. So thank you very much. Appreciate
thank you,
it.
Thank you.
And with that, we will transition to the next part of our agenda, which is an elections discussion. For clarity's sake, the following folks are not returning to the assembly, from my understanding. We have Bruce Roble, Chris Dawson. We have a vacant position that we'll be working on. Tanya Grove, Kevin Fitch, Valar Thompson is a question mark. Laura Johnson Kelly, Peggy Anderson, and Herf. I'm trying to remember. One of you is remaining, correct?
Herf is
okay. So Peggy is going off to do other things, and then we had two current members that are filling roles that were vacant last year that are going to continue in their post, and that is Andrew Brooks and Carrie Sanzone. So what this means is that the remaining folks, we are all members of the elections committee. And despite the fact that so many folks volunteered right away, we had to narrow it down to one committee chair. So I have volunteered to be the committee chair. So the bottom line is that we have to keep in mind a few things. First, how do our elections fit into the bigger assemblies picture across campus and ensuring that our timing makes sense for the work that the Office of Assemblies has to do in support of student assembly elections, GPSA, and so forth. We do have to be done, though, by a certain point in May so that new members that are appointed to the University Assembly can then take those roles. So some considerations that are going forward that I'd like to propose but want to get you all's feedback on is that for future meetings, I would recommend that the Elections Committee consider meeting for the first time in March following the first EA meeting. And basically every other week that there's an EA meeting, we'll be meeting as an Elections Committee on a Wednesday, same time, 12 o'clock. And we will do those by Zoom as well, so that if you can't physically be at the meeting, you can at least participate via Zoom. Does that sound reasonable? Or I don't think we need a whole lot of meetings on the front end. Some of the concerns that or considerations that I think we need to think about as an assembly are our communications plan. And since Carrie is going to be remaining with the assembly as the communications chair, I think that we should defer to Carrie's committee on determining how best to advertise vacancies, which methods we use, whether we include the Cornell Sun, the Paw Print Chronicle, emails, you know, what is our Facebook, what strategy do we have to get the word out about the vacancies? And the other piece that I think we should advertise on the front end is kind of the timeline, so that folks that are considering running for positions know when they're expected to have their petitions into the Office of Assembly, when the campaign period will take place, and then ultimately when the online voting will take place. Once that's concluded, although those members aren't officially seated until the next term, I would like your thoughts on inviting them to start backseating early as on a voluntary basis if they're able to. I know that for some of us, it's been very helpful to come in a little bit early to see what our counterparts were doing and know what the priorities were, just to and make some connections with others around the table. Is there a reason that we can't open that up to folks or concerns about that? Gina, are there any concerns from your perspective as far as doing that?
No, I think it's a great idea.
Okay.
I think the Elections Committee has to approve the calendar as a first order of business.
Okay. So I'm working with the Office of Assemblies on identifying some dates. I'm going to try and get down to have a three-hour meeting with Gina before she goes to Italy to ensure that everything is finalized. But in all seriousness, I'll work with Pam over the next week so that the two of us can figure out what makes the most sense. And I'll bring that to the Elections Committee for our first meeting, which we'll send a notification out about. And then we can vote on that or make any adjustments as necessary. Okay. The other thing that internally we need to be thinking about as well is the Executive Committee for the next term. I am not intending to run again for chair. It's been about a year and a half since Ulysses stepped down, but I would like to continue serving in the role as the veterans representative on the assembly for next year. So those of you that might consider taking a more active leadership role within the assembly, if you have questions, concerns, all of the above, I'd be more than happy to talk to you about it. I can tell you there were a lot of surprises. And a lot of good surprises, too. So, I mean, it's hard work, but it's been extremely rewarding. Hey has, am I speaking out of turn?
No.
So, Hey is intending to run for executive vice chair again. But again, these nominations are open for anybody that's interested in positions, so please consider that. Pilar is undecided at this point whether or not she will be remaining with the Employee Assembly. Kevin is definitely stepping down. He's taking a government position as an elected official in the town of Skaneateles. And, Skaneateles. That's built on Pahonics. Skaneateles.
Yes, Andrea.
What's Kevin's role on the exec again?
Kevin is the parliamentarian.
And remember, obviously, all the new people are also able to run for the executive committee and chairs of committees and things like that. So there will be hopefully a larger pool of people anyway to then share the workload.
Yep.
The opportunities.
Yes.
And there are a lot of
the
opportunities.
Fun. Yes.
So with that, I'm sorry.
Can we force you to run for president?
chair.
I can run for president, but I'm not going to run for chair. Thank you, but I need to take a back seat for a little bit. So are there other questions?
Well, I do have a comment.
Yes.
There was a meeting yesterday at the Retirees Association. I'm part of that steering committee. So the position that I share with her, that was never intended to be a permanent or a prolonged one. So one of us would go off and then her will go off in a year. So that was brought up, and there's two things that might happen. Someone might self-nominate themselves. They're going to put it through the retiree newsletter.
Okay.
And see what that might bring. Otherwise, they plan to appoint someone.
Okay.
And it'll probably be someone from the steering committee.
All right, great. Well, we'll look forward to hearing how that process is going.
So we won't be part of the normal.
Yes, please. Please, yes. You all's input is very valuable. The perspective that is brought to the table, your experiences and recognizing when things have been tried in the past, maybe not have been successful or, you know, unique opportunities. So that your perspective is critically important to the work we're doing.
I heard the transportation presentation yesterday. It was very interesting to hear it from a group of retired people because their issue really is mobility. Some of them would like to go to the wellness center and keep that up, but they can't walk a quarter of a mile.
Right.
You know, so it's a whole different set of issues. They're considering moving wellness off campus into some facility over in Hillsboro.
Interesting.
To accommodate them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They won't have the pool, but they'll have the
right. Thank you for sharing that. And are there other questions regarding the elections process or the committee functioning? Okay, great. We'll move into committee reports. Carrie, the floor is yours.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, let me turn on my video. Hold on a second. Hello, hello. Hi.
Hello.
Can you see me? Hi. let's see. So I just put on a kickoff meeting on the calendar for our awards review committee. And I have a couple invitations going out to get a little bit better representation from HR. So hopefully we'll get a couple more people to join us. But that just went on the calendar, and I'm scheduling the rest of our meetings for the semester. I don't have much more to report other than that, but we'll be working on a communications plan for elections. And that's all I have to say, I guess.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for Carrie? Okay. Thank you very much. Education committee, I think Arla is out today. Mm-hmm. Is there somebody from the other education committee that would like to provide an update?
We haven't met since the last time.
Okay.
Since the last update, so I don't think there is anything to report.
Okay, thank you very much, Ann. Welfare Committee, Andrea?
Yeah, we meet on Monday. I think there's a couple of new issues to consider. One being confidential counseling options for staff that similar to what we have for students. So that's some of the new things we're going to be considering, as well as some other stuff. So we have a Zoom meeting on Monday at noon.
Great. Thank you very much. And for those of you that don't know, Jeremy, are you out there?
He is.
Okay. Jeremy brought these ideas forward. I just wanted to thank you publicly for bringing that forward with regard to staff mental health. And Andrea, thank you to your committee for taking a look at that.
Next is Christine with the Transportation Committee.
We just had the
I got nothing. That's it. I'll be providing some feedback to the parking optimization study. A couple points that came to mind. Reference to the sustainability goals of campus and how this recommendations will be kind of in line with that. I've made comments before, but I'm going to emphasize audience-based recommendations or consumption population-based recommendations, that not all recommendations serve all populations equally, mm-hmm. and some of them are more aligned to staff concerns than others, and I think they should target that kind of frame the recommendations in that way. And thirdly, to address some of the concerns that were raised yesterday at the meeting as to how we're responding to that population as well.
That's what I did. I piped right up when they showed the graph that the Hoy Road parking garage is only 70% used. It's actually less than that. I said, well, if you lowered the cost, ordinary people could use it.
Yeah.
Kind of echoing what Ann mentioned as well.
Additionally, I'll be sending out responses to questions that were already submitted. So if you have other questions for them, I'll get responses and send them out to everyone.
Great. And so they're meeting next week with. Mm-hmm. Is this vice president level?
I believe it's the provost and vice presidents. I think it's a steering committee for a project.
Okay. Yeah,
like an capital executive.
Project. Right. Yeah. Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Terry, Benefits and Policy Committee.
So we're going to meet tomorrow and we have HR joining us. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about internal hires. Apparently, we have some difficulties that brought up. To us that there are some way we filter candidates. So we're going to talk to HR about start the conversation, like what's happening there. So from this moment on, every meeting I'm going to have different people coming from different units. So I have HR benefits coming next time. The one after is work life. So we're going to circulate through these.
Okay.
You know? So I guess the committee members like that because, you know, they get to raise real questions, you know, and, you know, have a discussion. So that's that. I have joined the transportation conversation as well. Yesterday, I got invited to, Christy invited me to the meeting. So I didn't bring this to the group, but I'm starting to think of this in terms of policy. And really, we need to kind of drill down and figure out what policies might affect transportation based on Mary Opperman's call to think about how, when, where we work. So step one is to kind of identify like the population and an inventory of policies that we can touch on. Because right now I can think of flex time could be. It's like, okay, if you're not here every day on campus, that affects transportation. But what else, you know? Are you retired? You know, what are the challenges you have? So it's going to be a lot of things to think about in the future. The other thing, so I have worked with HR, Lauren Jacoby, to finalize what I'm going to represent to the EA with regards to looking into personal time off rates. I know we had the conversation here. I showed you the presentation. So the next step is to put a survey out, you know, and maybe talk about the survey here. You know, I'm not just going to send something out without letting you know. So I have these graphs I made, so it becomes much easier to get people's, like, you know, what do you think we should steer? And I did it this way because now this is kind of blessed by HR. I did not put something on the table that is totally like nuts. Nobody's gonna, like HR is gonna say, oh, no, we're not gonna do this. No, so the stuff, the options I put on the table are already blessed by HR. There's possibility for it to go there. So this way, nobody's afraid to like express their opinions. They're gonna say, oh, pie in the sky, too high. This is never gonna happen. We're just gonna put it there and I want your votes and your cooperation. And they're willing to, you know, accommodate our request. So So yay for us. So, so that's what I have.
Thank you very much, Derek.
Thank you.
Hey, do you have anything for the executive committee?
We meet once a week right before this meeting. We've been talking a little bit about the middle school accreditation. We met, Gina is also in the group that I'm in. And we're going to meet again this Friday, and we'll review the prior accreditation that we submitted, try to abbreviate it, and work on submitting something new and more concise.
Okay. I would ask if one of the members that went to the, were you at the UA meeting last night? Okay.
Yeah.
Do you mind sharing a few thoughts?
Wasn't prepared for that. So yesterday we passed a resolution thanking Kathy Zoner for her service as police chief. Mm-hmm. We had a presentation from the University of Bunsen's office, and that was just going over their process, the number of people that they see throughout the year. Surprisingly, they see about 400 to 500 people a year, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Ranging from students to staff to faculty, and just having or helping them navigate different areas throughout the university.
Great. Thank you very much for the update.
Well.
Okay. Open discussion, or we can adjourn. It's up to you.
Staff outreach.
Yes. So open discussion,
yes.
Being staff outreach. So.
I just have one thing to add.
Yes, please.
I'm the EA liaison to the Retirement Plan Oversight Committee meeting, and we had a meeting this last month, and basically I just want to let you know that the group that is overseeing your pension plans is continuing to try to whittle down the choices, because there was a lawsuit based on, you know, having too many choices and making it too confusing to people, and the committee's working away. There's really nothing significant to report.
Right.
I just want to get it in the minutes that, you know, we have an EA rep on the Retirement Plan Oversight Committee, and as retirees know, this is a really important thing, but, you know.
Is there an overall goal of the number of choices they want to maybe get to?
I believe they may have those numbers, but I don't know exactly what they are.
Because right now, it's like, it's 100 or something. I mean, it's a lot.
It's a lot, and, you know, they have already reduce the numbers, and basically what the committee does is they flag underperforming funds and recommend that people who are participating in those be mapped onto better performing funds, and there were a couple recommendations for that recently. So people who are, you know, the small number of people who will be affected will get letters in the mail saying, hey, you know, you're going to be in this mid-cap value fund, it's going to be mapped to another one. So they try to minimize the disruption to Cornell participants. But
is this endowed?
Yes.
If I could just make just one remark on that. Personally, I love choices. But I found that the last time that the list was whittled down, the communication just didn't reach me at all. I mean, and I don't know if that was like a spam issue or whatever, but I woke up one day and all my funds had been remapped to something else and had like a freak out. So I personally would say think about other ways to get that in front of people. Maybe actually when you log in, a note, a message, an alert or something like that. Because when mail comes to me from Fidelity or whatever, I usually assume it's a prospectus and I recycle it almost immediately. But That was like a jarring thing for me personally. So I would just advocate for maybe a different communication strategy. Also, I would say for people that care or would like to have their same options that they used to have, you can link your account to like a new sort of outside of Cornell account and still do whatever you want to do with the funds.
We still have the brokerage window available, so people can retain those. Now, this is my third year on the committee. They have only eliminated one fund in that time and mapped those people to something else. So I'm not sure by the time.
That was curious.
involved, and that was what?
I was going to make millions on that, Laura.
but most of the things, you know, if they're seriously underperforming, they no longer have that as an option.
Right.
What they're trying to do is have tier one and tier two be intuitively obvious. If people want to choose various things, they have several choices within each broad category, but then way more choices available in the brokerage window. So people
right.
do have, you know, are you know, financial investment gurus and really want that one fund.
Yeah. Yeah. I ended up doing that brokerage link thing, but it went from, I want to say it was like 220 options at one point. And it's
yeah.
and it's been cut down a lot.
That
so
was
a lot
150,
of,
I think. Yeah.
Something like maybe I could be wrong, but it was a lot of the sort of select things that disappeared.
Most of that happened just before I joined the committee, so I
yeah.
can't speak to
that. Anyway, just advocating for different communication.
Thank you for sharing that, Carrie. So the with regard to the next topic, outreach, we have this really awesome opportunity over the next month as we get ready to go into elections mm-hmm. to tell our story and to talk about what you do and what you don't do and what you think you do all across the board with regard to the EA. And so I encourage you to use that as an ice-breaking opportunity to reach out to folks both in your office areas and with your constituency groups. And we need to also recognize in doing this that when you have somebody like Ellen Miller represents about 5,000 employees, that you know we have to support one another, from whether it's an affinity group or whether it's the College of Arts and Sciences. We're all in this together, getting the message out. And so if you have creative ways or creative ideas and would like to share any of those ideas, let's explore and talk about it a little bit. Besides email.
Pizza.
Well, I don't know if the OA is going to be able to fund a university-wide pizza fest.
Yeah, it could.
I don't know about university-wide, though. I don't know.
Food's always good. Yeah, I mean, if we do tabling events, have some food out with them during high traffic areas around campus, those are always helpful.
We can help coordinate cookies and things like, and you know, if there's coffee chats or things.
And we did that for the elections last year. I sat in places and we got candy and fruit because I like to balance.
Just out of curiosity, for those of us that didn't, how much traffic did you get?
Well, some of the new faces saw me and met me and chatted to me during those tabling sessions. So
it worked. Where
I think I'm pretty, you know,
where were you?
Persuasive. We did one over in Johnson and then we did something else.
There was one in here in
physical sciences. Try to get out and have treats and specifically talk about elections.
Chris, you were at one.
Over in the Sage Hall,
yeah,
in the dining.
And then we did the career. There was another, like some sort of vendor.
Yep.
Other one that we sat in, and again, just stop people, hand out information, tell them what we do, tell them, yeah, just be as proactive. And I some of the new faces were recruited in that moment. So.
And Nancy, how far in advance should we think about using the paw print to splash some information, kind of mark your calendars or be thinking about? Or
that's a harder question for me to answer than I thought it would be. probably when we need to have everything wrapped up in May, is
mm-hmm.
that what you said? So usually
first week
you,
of May.
You start
like
around
yesterday.
Now,
yeah.
It takes time to
yeah.
get people
yeah.
recruited.
Yep.
So,
when does the next issue come out? Is it Friday?
This Friday.
Are we past the deadline?
Yeah. but let me or Carrie get back to you, because you know, I mean, we also have the EA newsletter.
Yeah.
Right.
And that goes to more people.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
No, if I may.
Please.
I'm not allowed to say anything.
No? Okay. Then back to you, Craig.
We're all just giving a suspense.
Yeah, I know. Thanks, Gina.
Any other thoughts?
The one thing I can say,
yes.
which is part of why this is harder for me to say, is that I'm going to retire at the end of March.
I'd like to put a motion on the floor to
stop
cancel
retirement.
Well, congratulations.
Well,
that's
yay.
Wonderful news.
Go for you.
Yeah, that news is sort of out and about, so I can
about.
Share that.
There's a retiree position available.
Yeah. Now that's a sell right there.
And we will see you in April.
No, Nancy, you're coming back. What? You're coming back.
Yeah.
I will be, because March is kind of the middle of the busy season, I will be doing freelance work for Chronicle during April, May. So I'll still be writing staff-related articles and keeping the continuity there as we figure out a transition.
Now the Cornell Sun's not retiring anytime soon, are you?
I got to go to class.
Have a great day and enjoy your whatever.
Thank you.
Carrie, you had something you wanted to say?
Yeah, well, so I mentioned at the retreat, or somebody mentioned at the retreat, and I think Ellen and I talked a little bit about this internal communications project that's going on in our division, and one of the outcomes is going to be that we see changes to the CU Info website, which is sort of intended for staff. There's going to be a lot more coordination to select news content and get a steady flow of really staff-focused stuff going on to that site. And so one of the things, there is going to be an editorial meeting weekly with contributors. So one of the things I could suggest is that the EA have some representation at those meetings to pitch ideas, not only for featuring on CU Info, but in whatever whatever newsletters or emails go out to staff. So that's sort of just starting up as a concept. So we could ask for representation in that group. I don't know what the response will be, but it's just
okay.
An idea.
Yeah, thank you. Anything else that we would like to discuss this afternoon? Okay, well, we have some exciting talks coming up and guests. First of all, from the National Climate Assessment, and I don't know if that's exciting, but professionally educational talks coming up. First is Michael Hoffman from the National Climate Assessment and IPCC reports. I'm not sure what IPCC stands for. But... Okay.
International Panel on Climate Change, I think.
Awesome. Okay. Sustainability. All right. And then Chantel Cleary, who is the Title IX officer for the university, will be coming on March 20th. If there are no questions, I hope you all have a wonderful day. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Greg.
Yes. See you, Jeremy. See you, Carrie.
Take care. Good to see you all.
It's coming Monday.
I'll be.
Same place.